Welcome on to Hollinger and Duncan, much to discuss the bottom of the league.
Fun times.
Something that we, what'd you say?
Fun times.
I will say this, though, as I go through this, there aren't that many teams where I'm just like, I just feel terrible about their future.
Right, right. The truly depressing like outlooks, yeah, pretty limited in number.
Yeah, I would say there's really only one team that I just feel awful about that I'm like, man, this team has very limited chance of doing anything in the near future. But we'll get to that team. Let's begin here with a group that we did, I think, 1 through 13 or so last week. This is a group that I viewed as up-and-coming teams that I didn't necessarily see as having the ultimate upside to get into being a conference finals, or at least a regular conference finals type of contender. And I could put these in any order. This is like my 14 through 20 group.
Wow.
The Cleveland Cavaliers.
Really?
Were right in this mix for me. You're lower on them?
I had them a tier below, yes.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So why are you lower on them? And they got Evan Mobley and Darius Garland and Jared Allen. I mean, that's three, you know, probably low guys with lower end all-star upside at least, who are all 23 or under. Like, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Maybe I was too low on them. Especially relative,
not a fan of the organization.
Especially relative to one team that I'm looking at now that maybe I shouldn't have had above them that I do right now. I guess I was still a little curious about what the high end outcomes there might be. But as I think about it a little more, like Mobley could end up being pretty awesome. They need better wing players, which often isn't that hard to find, or at least you can, it's an easier thing to luck into wing players who are good enough to be the fourth best player on a good team than it is to luck into a Mobley Allen front court combination. Right. So as I think about this and talk, I had them at the top of the next tier. And as I look at this, I think that's wrong. I think I need to move them up. So I'm going to move them into this tier.
Yeah. I mean, I think at a minimum, they're going to be a 500 ish team I think they could feasibly take a step back next year just because they improved so much this year. I mean, I think people who are just expecting, all right, if they're healthy next year, they're going to play the way they did when they were healthy this year. I think that's maybe asking a little too much. But I think they're going to at least be in the play-in mix for the next 5 years and with some upside above that. Now, the two things that give me pause on them, I'm not sure that any of these guys has like absolute crazy upside. Maybe that's Mobley, but I don't see him as like an Anthony Davis level offensive player, even if he might be an Anthony Davis level of defensive player.
I'd agree with that.
And same thing with Garland. You know, I think he's kind of more of a lower end all-star over the next couple of years. I don't see him as really breaking into the top five at his position necessarily. And Allen is kind of, you know, he's an all-star this year because he's not what I normally think of as an all-star. He's kind of this, you know, a rim running defense center, very good version of that archetype. But unless you're Rudy Gobert, I don't see him as really being like that level of defensive player as well. And then just the fit of Allen and Mobley, while it's worked better than expected, I wonder about your high end outcomes there with two more traditional bigs as, you know, getting into a playoff series and just can they score well enough?
This is a team that could go to the playoffs 7 straight years and never make a conference finals.
Also, I'd feel better if they hadn't just traded a first and a really good second for Caris LeVert.
I agree with that.
That's not looking too good. And presumably they still believe in him and they're going to just pay him this offseason, right? So that I don't see them.
Extension eligible, so they could ride it out. But yeah, I think extending him would be sort of a low-key disaster because, I mean, their cap sheet is pretty clean because Kevin Love comes off after next year. But to go ahead and turn that dividend into, paying LeVert, I'm worried they're going to pay Sexton too.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I wonder how he ends up fitting in. I really wish we could have seen more of him this year on a real team for the first time. And yeah, I think, and I'm just not that big a believer in their management. They've had some hits, but they also, I think, have a little bit of just like, they're not exactly shooting for the moon. Like, this LeVert trade to me was a ceiling lowering trade. And I just didn't like this idea of like, oh, first sign of success. Like, let's fucking go for it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, now they're probably going to be in the play-in and might possibly not even make, I mean, to me, they might not even make the playoffs.
We'll get into that. We'll get into that at the end of the show, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But there are a lot of young teams. I actually want to list off just this whole group here.
Okay.
Because I think it's interesting to just think of all these teams and like argue about which ones we think are best. So I got Cleveland here.
Okay.
I got Minnesota here. This is kind of just young teams that have good young players that seem to be on the upside, but also, you know, not necessarily a ceiling. Atlanta, who I think we can all acknowledge that them making the conference finals last year was a total fluke. New Orleans.
Yes.
Toronto.
Yes.
And I did put Chicago in here, even though they've got a little bit different of an age profile, but they also have some young talent as well. But let me just...
I was expecting a CH team, but not Chicago.
Well, I had Charlotte in there too.
Oh, okay. All right.
So here's the... Those are the seven teams, all right? Tell me whose future you like the best of these seven teams.
Toronto.
Cleveland. Cleveland, Minnesota, Charlotte, Atlanta, New Orleans, Toronto, Chicago. You like Toronto the best out of all those teams.
Yes. I think they have the largest quantity of good players right now. They have the best team right now. They're still relatively young. They have the best management of any of those teams and the best coach. And so I think they're just...
But I would say they have the worst best player or best prospect. Although, again, with this maybe where we disagree on Barnes.
You see, I think Barnes could be really good and really good at a position that really makes a difference too. Like playoff good, you know, where it's like this 6'8" guy who's switching onto your center, but he's playing point guard. It's like, what the hell do you do? But
compare him to Zion and Ingram in New Orleans, Trey Young in Atlanta, LaMelo and Bridges in Charlotte, Edwards and Towns in Minnesota. I just don't think Toronto has a combination like that, even though I do think they have the rest of the advantage. Like, I do kind of maybe trust that organization to figure it out more.
Aren't those best players also limiting in some ways? Like, Towns, as good as he is, he also limits you in some ways, right? Defensively? Because basically anything they try only sort of works. Ditto for Trey Young in Atlanta. And, you know, we'll see what LaMelo becomes, I guess. And then Zion in New Orleans, obviously, there's a giant defensive question mark there too. Like, I think even though there isn't quite that one guy that you want to circle, I still think high-end outcomes are more plausible for this Toronto group just because of the way they're built and the guys they have. It just gives them... They don't have any punching bags in a playoff series.
Yeah, I think we'll learn a lot more about them in the next 3 weeks or so. And I'm probably also underrating what Siakam is and has been this year as well. But so much depends on Barnes. If Scottie Barnes becomes an all-star, then yeah, I think I probably do like Toronto the best of this group because you've got two other all-star level of players in Van Vliet and Siakam. Now, they're a little older. Barnes is going to have to make this happen within a year or two. I don't know if they're going to luck into another number four pick, but yeah, their coach is really good. Their organization is really good. And I also think that there are just some easy ways just to get a little bit more shooting in there that they could be a lot better on offense pretty quickly here as well. Yeah, maybe they should be at the top of this group. I think maybe I'll move them up. Because you make a great point about Towns. I got asked this the other day of like, hey, what can the Wolves do to like get into championship contention? And I'm like, as good as Karl-Anthony Towns is, I think the answer is probably nothing. Like, I just don't think you can. I mean, the same problem that I've said that there is with Jokic, I think it's like triply as bad with Towns.
As far as being able to
build a championship level of defense.
Yeah.
I don't know. Any other thoughts on the teams in that group? I mean, we'll save Chicago for a second here, but are there any of these like big challenges or things that people may not be thinking about for the future of some of those teams?
I mean, Charlotte's still kind of a mystery meat, right? Because, I mean, LaMelo Ball still has crazy upside, I think. But yeah, there are these moments of looseness with that team, obviously. You wonder about the management there. But you also look and you see, like, okay, well, you could have Ball and Bridges with, you know, a bunch of other, like, pretty good players and athletes and stuff. Like, you could see how this all works. Like, man, trading that future first for Kai Jones. Like, what the hell was that about?
Well, and it hamstrings them so much.
Oh, they can't do any trades now because of the stipulation on the pick. Yeah.
Well, and also this is something that's been litigated quite a bit in the Charlotte market. But to me, the Hayward trade, even though he's been okay for them, like he still has missed a bunch of time. We'll see if he's even back for these playoffs. He wasn't around for last year's push. They probably would have made the playoffs if he'd been around, but it just, that was so short-sighted, especially when you're essentially paying him $40 million a year with the Batum stretch.
Yeah.
As well. That just showed, it's somewhat similar to Cleveland, I would say, just a lack of vision.
Can we please just get the 8 seed? That's all we want. Yeah.
Yeah.
We just want to,
I mean,
get the 8 seed and hold a parade for ourselves.
Yeah. As amazing as that 2021 draft was, if they just don't sign Hayward, let's say they had just gotten, you know, the 6th or 7th pick or something and gotten Kuminga or Wagner or Josh Giddey in their program, how much better a position they would be in than to have had Hayward. And yeah, okay, like, you know, Mitch Kupchak, you feel better about your job, whatever, that they've been around 500 these last couple of years, and they've, you know, they've now won what, like 6 out of 7 or 7 out of 8 without Hayward and they've looked really good. It just, that worries me. That and the Kai Jones move are just not future focused. I mean, no, Kai Jones is very raw, obviously, but also the fact that he hasn't even been able to like sniff the court this year is concerning to me, given some of their needs at center and all the COVID stuff.
And yeah, and so, the four, because like even they've even ended up playing JT Thor, who they took 14 picks later, and plays the same position, is the same body type, basically, like a rangy, like 6'11 guy who's basically 200 pounds.
Yeah, I think it was 18 picks. I think he was 37 and Jones was 19.
Oh yeah, you're right. But, you're right. Yeah.
Or 18. But yeah, in any event, yeah, and you know, trading for Plumlee is just kind of, now here's what you might say: if they could ever get their hands on a real defensive center, like, they could be pretty nasty, right? There is just this one hole that if they upgraded it, they might be able to get into being a team that's still in the mix in the East. Now they're also hurt by the fact that the East is like good now, which is
right. Yeah. You can't just show up and get the 6th seed anymore just by not sucking. Yeah.
And New Orleans, another team where just some of their management moves and the short-sightedness and the moral hazard there just really make me wonder.
It was hard to know where to put New Orleans, but there's talent there and they're still sitting on picks. And now, I mean, this Laker bounty they're about to get is the other thing.
Oh my God. Oh man.
Like, they're going to, they traded this pick, right? But they sure, top 10 protected. Well, the Lakers are going to end up with, they're on pace now to end up with the 9th worst record, I think, which it would be amazing if that happened and then two teams jumped them in the lottery and pushed it back to 11. But if New Orleans comes out of this with a lottery pick and still has the Lakers unprotected first next year, and is still sitting on 2 firsts from the holiday deal from Milwaukee. So between the picks they're still sitting on, even though they traded their own pick, is still most likely going to Portland. I mean, they would have to win in the play-in in order to not owe that pick. If Paul George is playing for the Clippers, I don't see them winning a play-in game in LA, but it's one game, you never know. So they're in good shape that way. There is talent there, especially if Williamson actually plays in a game at some point. I'm just worried they're going to give Williamson a max extension and just end up eating a shit sandwich out of that.
Yeah, well, you know, David Griffin believes in the power of positive thinking, going back to that Lakers pick. And so surely in the most New Orleans thing ever, he's bought voodoo dolls for every member of the front office and the business staff of LeBron James, and they're just sticking pins into his ankle on a daily basis. Yeah, David Griffin is emailing the organization constantly saying, don't give up, we can get this pick. But yeah, so it's just, And then you throw in obviously the Zion health as well. Like if they could get Zion back to playing the way he played last year, you know, I think this would be a 50 win type of group. But then you wonder about them possibly winning a championship as well. The Zion health and just that the management has been poor, the ownership has been poor. I mean, they certainly, I think to have lucked into, like gotten the bounty that they did for Davis and Holiday and to have gotten Zion, this is a pretty disappointing future for them to be. Because, you know, if you had done this right when Zion got drafted, you'd be like, oh, these guys are going to be a force for a long time. And it's, they've squandered a lot of that, unfortunately. Trae Young, I think, is really, really good. He's one of the best offensive players in basketball. I think they're always going to have a really good offense if he's around. They may have a bad defense if he's around, although I still think that it's possible to have a good defense with Trae Young. It's just harder.
Yeah.
But this, getting the second star in, they don't really have a path for that, a path to be a consistent, 55 win team. If they improve the defense, they could maybe get to 50. But again, another team I just don't see a path to them in championship contention.
Their path is to drop a giant package on somebody for like a big wing.
I guess, but those guys aren't available. Like there was hope that Jaylen Brown might spring free and...
From Atlanta, so obviously did down here. That was definitely a thing people were talking about, but I don't see that happening.
I mean, maybe it's a sign and trade for Miles Bridges
right. This
offseason. You know, maybe it could be something along those lines, but where they also give up like two first round picks in that deal and then just hope that Bridges develops into that second guy and that Okongwu can be a monster defensively. You know, he might give them an out, possibly, maybe a Capella trade if he still has value around the league. Like, I think there are ways they can definitely, to me, the way they played this year is on the lower end of what should be expected going forward. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, definitely.
Yeah, unless they get some sort of a Trey injury. John Collins, does he have any trade value? Like, what's the story with him? He's always been a weird fit there. So all of these teams, I mean, I really struggle to say, if you want to say who's going to have the best record over the next 5 years out of all these teams, I have no clue. It could be any of them, but I also, and I think at least one of them will emerge in a way we don't expect to be like a 50, mid-50s type win. Not that anybody actually wins 55 games anymore because no one gives a shit about the regular season, but you know, a healthy 55 win type of team.
Right. The caliber of team that could be a top two seed and make a conference final.
I mean, how crazy is that, that only two teams this year are going to win more than 52 games as projected by 538 right now?
It's wild. So it's been there was a 30 loss team as the top seed in the East was 2003 with Detroit, and looks like we're going to get that this year, or we're heading that way. It may end up being 29. We'll see. And then there's only two teams in the West that are on pace to exceed that. Phoenix, obviously, was just off in their own universe. And then Memphis, sadly, threatening the team record for wins in a season set by the 2012-13 Grizzlies at 56. They are two away from tying it, three away from setting a new mark.
I mean, I think they'll probably get there. I don't know. Their schedule must be hard.
Their remaining schedule is actually hard, and Morant is not playing. I don't know if he's going to play until the playoffs. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah,
I mean,
Phoenix, Utah, Denver, New Orleans, Boston. In any event, though, let's continue here. I mean, so were there any of these teams that you had like way higher or lower? Do you agree with me that they're all kind of...
You kind of convinced me that Cleveland belongs in this tier. I was lower on Chicago.
I have them at the very bottom of this at 20. They kind of defy categorization because they've got some young guys and some old guys. And part of why they defy categorization is because they've moved in a way that's somewhat atypical, where they had a rebuilding team and then they cashed in their chips, some in ways that have worked, some in ways that haven't. And, you know, I kind of see them as being a 45 win-ish team at best the rest of the, you know, for these next few years. I don't, unless Patrick Williams blows up, I have big time health concerns about Lonzo going forward.
Yeah, what's going on with him? I haven't really been following that one.
Well, this is the second time he's had surgery on that knee, and he tried to come back from it. This time it was a 6 to 8 week timeline, and he was getting swelling in it and he couldn't ramp up his activity, so they stopped him from running for 7 to 10 days, which I think is, he's still in the middle of that period right now, so he's not coming back this year.
Wow.
And they ruled him out officially, but I was
shocked. Right. Yeah. No, for for some reason, I just like completely like that just like completely washed over me.
So, you know, it's hard to count on him. I do think maybe, and then Vucevic is just only going to get worse. Their defense is so reliant on Lonzo and Caruso, and that I think can be exploited eventually in the playoffs. So I think to me, they were, and DeRozan is never going to have a season like this again. I don't think LaVine can be better because he's had the knee issue. So I think
that's the low key one you worry about is with LaVine. Because you could see it's affecting him right now. I mean, I think clearly. And if he's playing on a max deal
But there's nothing structurally wrong, John. He just has like swelling in his knee for no reason.
You know, Chicago's kind of been known for these medical mysteries over the last few years. I don't know offhand how much Karnišević cleaned house when he got in there, but it's interesting that this kind of stuff is cropping up again.
So I see them as, you know, maybe they shouldn't be in this group, but I also, my next group was Portland and the Lakers, and so I think maybe they deserve a little more optimism.
Okay, they need more respect than that. Yeah, I agree with that.
So Chicago, I when we did this, we put this together like a week ago, and I had them as one of my hardest to rank, but I think they're just kind of, they're in 45 win purgatory right now, even as well as the DeRozan move went.
Yeah, exactly. They went for a slightly higher level of the Charlotte strategy, but they don't have LaMelo Ball on their team. They have the wrong Ball brother.
Well, and honestly, they're pretty lucky that the Cleveland Cavaliers have had all these injury issues, because they would be in the play-in otherwise.
100%.
Now, they've had their own injury issues too, but still. Yeah. So is there anyone else that you had around this area, or are we moving down now?
So we're moving down, but I think there's definitely a next team to talk about who's like half a tier below, but like not quite a full tier to me. Yeah. And that's Detroit, where you have Cade Cunningham, you have a likely high pick this year, you have the cap room, you have a couple of guys who are pretty interesting. You have Grant, who's either tradable or a good player. I think they're set up a little better than some of these other teams. There's a little more reason to be optimistic there, I think, if you're a Pistons fan. You disagree?
Well,
there are things I question there too. So let me argue with myself here. You know, what the front office situation is and the different chefs in the kitchen there, and whether any of these guys that they've brought in really bring any kind of high level upside to them.
Whether Michael Tellum has any other clients in Israel that they need to sign.
Hey, got to get that buyout check, man.
So I had a group from 23 to 26. I actually had Portland and the Lakers, just because I think, you know, the Lakers still have LeBron James. Portland still has Damian Lillard.
So So here was my argument for having Portland at the top of this next group, is that A, they still have Damian Lillard. B, they still have the chip of potentially trading Damian Lillard. And I think up until the point they actually extend him, they can get a lot for him. So I would move them down if they actually committed to that extension, which I think would make his contract far more toxic. But I think right now, that's still a guy with a lot of trade value if they decide to go that direction next year. And they put themselves in a much better position asset-wise, certainly. It's still a little tricky to see where it's going from here, but I feel like there's a little more light at the end of the tunnel. I think you know, even if you resign Simons and Nurkic and bring back Hart and see what that is, like that's still like, there's a lot of trade value in that, if nothing else. I still see pathways for them, I guess, to get to points B and C. They're in a hard spot, but I think it's not quite an impossible spot.
Yeah, and they probably got two lottery picks coming this year as well. Now, this rumors of trading for Jeremy Grant don't exactly titillate me.
Yeah, I mean, tell me what they're giving up, but yeah, I don't get super excited about that one either.
It's going to be the
New Orleans pick, right? Would you trade, I mean, the 14th pick for, the problem is you're just getting a year of Jeremy Grant unless you extend him, and the extension, I don't know if you feel great about extending him either though, you know? So it's that's a tough one.
I agree. Now, they could extend him and then, hey, if it's not working, he and Dame at the trade deadline, that would be a possibility after they've 6 months after they've already extended him. Like, you know, it wouldn't be a disaster. disaster. Like, they might be able to recoup some of that value for Grant if they do move for him. But I think, you know, they'll be in the play-in mix next year, and they have a way to rebuild and get better. Obviously, they're terrible this year. If we're counting this year, that's not too exciting. They're not putting an NBA basketball team out there on the floor, if you want to discount them a little bit for that. And I think their management actually is pretty good. I've liked what Cronin has done so far. And just the question is going to be now, how do they balance the still trying to compete with Dame thing? They're going to want to get a look at how he is after this surgery next year. It doesn't sound like they're going to trade him in the offseason. So they are going to try to improve some this offseason, it seems like. Let's get back to Detroit, though. I had them in the group from 23 to 26 with Houston, Orlando, and Indiana. And I think you can make legitimate arguments for all of those teams. Is why do you think Detroit is way better off than Houston, Orlando, or Indiana? Cade?
I just think Cade has a little more high-level upside in him than anyone on the other two rosters.
Yeah, I could see that. I think those other teams, though, have more depth. I probably believe in Detroit's management the least of those groups, especially now that Houston isn't going to be trying to pay the luxury tax and Rafael Stone can just kind of do what he wants. I've liked what Stone has done largely so far. I was deeply skeptical of him after Morey left, and I think he's assuaged a lot of those. Like, I've liked what they've done, and it seems like Fertitta is just going to let him do what he wants to do. So I think you could make arguments for any of those. Even Indiana, like, Indiana will almost certainly be the best of those teams next year, it would seem, especially if they bring back Warren and he's healthy and they keep Turner.
Yeah, I mean, are they coming or going? Like, what are they doing there? What's their who on that team can play in an all-star game? I mean, Halliburton, maybe, I guess?
Maybe it could be Halliburton. Or maybe it could be whoever they draft this year. Let's be honest here. You know what? Honestly, the biggest thing that's going to determine which one of these teams goes forward is what happens in the lottery this year. That's the biggest determinant that we just don't know the answer to right now.
Yeah. I was lower on Indiana. I had them actually in the next tier.
I have them 26th.
Okay. All right. Well, then we're not that different because I had them 27th. No. Okay. San Antonio, I actually had in this tier.
Similarities between them.
There isn't like the one high level guy. Like, DeJounte Murray is good. He made the All-Star team this year. He's on a great contract, but there's only so high that he can lift a team. There are like a number of interesting younger players on good deals. They have a ton of cap room. They're going to play themselves out of a high pick, unfortunately, although they are sitting on two other firsts this year.
Yeah, that's the biggest reason why I have the Spurs below those other teams, is that they don't have that one centerpiece, and B, they're not going to have a high pick this year, which those other teams are.
Yeah, I guess that's fair, but we're doing the next 5 years, right? So year one, they have the Spurs will have a play-in game potentially. You know, that's got to be worth like gold for some of these teams,
that's,
right?
That's
like,
worth at least two U tiles for a Spurs fan.
Yeah.
But I think the Spurs are still going to be decent next year too. Whereas I think it's actually a good thing when we're talking about this level of it now. I'm probably more concerned about what are you going to be in 3 or 4 years, because the present for these teams isn't particularly scintillating at this point, right? Like, to me as a fan, if we're talking about who I want to be a fan of, we did our criteria of what we're basing this on at the start of last episode, if y'all missed it. But I would rather watch the Houston Rockets next year than the San Antonio Spurs. I would rather just watch Jalen Green develop than anyone on San Antonio.
Why do you hate Alperen Şengün?
Well, okay, there you go. That's another one. Şengün is a great watch. I love that guy.
Yeah.
So I almost would rather watch a rebuilding team than a 35 win 10th seed personally. And then they also have the greater upside later on. So that's why I have those teams ahead of San Antonio. Do we need to, like, Orlando? What's the story with them?
They
still don't have that one guy.
They still don't. They're going to have another high pick this year. They have a very clean cap. They still have future firsts from the Bulls and the Nuggets. It's hard to get excited. Like, if Jonathan Isaac was playing, we might feel better about them. He's still signed for 3 more years. Still could, I mean, potential defensive terror, right? Franz Wagner looks like a real deal.
Yeah. These guys could get into the play-in mix as early as next year, although they are so snake bit, it seems like.
right. I mean, the team that they have right now is just kind of boring, right? But
yeah,
but can it get better?
I mean, they still need that truly dynamic perimeter creator, but they're gonna have a, like, if they get that one guy, they may evolve into kind of what the Spurs have been the last couple of years, where you're like, man, they got all these young guys who are pretty good, and if you could just get one really good perimeter creator, like, this team might actually be a force, but they just don't have that guy.
Yeah.
I guess another reason to be higher on Houston is Houston has a lot of extra draft capital.
Draft capital and kind of random Şengün. You know, they have 3 first round picks from this last year. One of them could still pop. You know, Şengün's been pretty good, but like, even, you know, Christopher Garuba, let's see what happens with them. Just kind of younger guys just lying around. So yeah, I was probably too low on Houston as I look at this. Like, I should have had them ahead of San Antonio, certainly. Arguably should have had them ahead of the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers were tough to rank, but the thing of, like, no matter what, you have LeBron next year, and in 2 years you have a bunch of cap room and you're the Lakers. So it was hard for me to put them too low because there are still high-end possibilities there, even if they seem remote at the moment.
And LeBron and AD as well, that they're, I mean, I think they're gonna be at least, you know, around 500, you would hope, the next couple of years at a minimum. If they could just get rid of Westbrook and get a few more real players, I mean, these units that they're starting outside of LeBron and Westbrook, and not the, like, you know, I also rank Russell Westbrook the number 40 point guard in the NBA when Danny and I did our rankings, so it's not like he's some big help at this point.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, they just have no NBA players available. It's insane. Like, if just to get LeBron and AD back and just some real players who are just, like, you know, even rotation players, not even starters, and they could be right back in the potential.
Yeah, like, John Conchar would be a fucking A-list celebrity right now if he played for the Lakers.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. It's crazy. Yeah. So some of these teams that have these young guys that would be amazing for them, but of course they have kind of punted it on a lot of them. So I had them in Portland in somewhat similar straits. Portland looking better in terms of the draft capital, and if the Lakers better in terms of just their current overall talent. So
yeah.
Who else do we need to discuss here? My last tier is New York, Washington, and Sacramento, 28 through 30.
Yeah, I had Indiana in that tier too. Washington, I mean, this to me is why they should have traded Beal, because they're all in on 37 and 45 still. You know, they're taking their shot at Porzingis now. We'll see what happens with that. Yeah. Beal, it looks like they're going to end up giving Beal the bag. And then what? Then their best option is still to trade Beal, because none of these lottery picks these late lotto picks have hit at a level enough to make any meaningful difference. When you look at Avdija, Hachimura, Kispert, Kuzma, I mean, that was a good... What's crazy is Milwaukee is down here even though they did a lot of work, because they were a 30th, right? They were a clear 30th. Like, so
Washington. Yeah. I think you said Milwaukee there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Washington has done work to get themselves up to 29 or 28 or whatever we got them. Because that John Wall contract, my God, I mean, that thing was, you know, one of the most radioactive contracts in the league, and they managed to swap that for Westbrook, swap out Westbrook, somehow walk away with Kuzma and KCP, and now they have a surplus value contract with Kuzma, and KCP is at least halfway decent, and they have some options with what to do with that deal next year. So they're in a much better place, but it's still a not great place to be. So
if they had an owner with some fucking ambition, I might rank them higher, because then they would do the same thing. They would.
There's the same thing with Charlotte, and to a lesser extent, you know, Cleveland, Chicago, where they just kind of went all in to get some level of decent and have basically foreclosed any opportunity for anything beyond that.
Yeah. And you know, if Bradley Beal were as good as Damian Lillard, then you'd feel a lot better about them, right? But he's not. He's not a top 20 player right now. He was really bad this year. And, you know, maybe I expect he'll be a little better next year, but he's forgotten how to shoot 3-pointers. That's really odd. You know, if they were just, all right, we're going to trade Beal for as much as we can, as soon as we can, and then KCP and Kuzma, well, let's move them for late first rounders and play the young guys. And hey, we'll actually, because there's just, they can't get better. They have to just bite the bullet and be bad for an extended period and actually rebuild. And they're just going to never do that. And so they're just going to be 35 wins forever
unless Beal demands out, or they luck out in the lottery, or they hit an absolute home run on with a draft pick, which
they
really haven't done.
I do believe more in their group of management below Ted Leonsis, but there's only so much they can do in executing his pathetically limited vision.
Well, and there's also still the weirdness with the medical side and Tommy Shepard.
Sachi Braun left, though. So that's,
so now there's two people reporting to the owner instead of three, but it's still weird.
Yeah, it's not. It's no longer a triumvirate.
Yeah. So do we like their future better than the Knicks or worse?
I would have to say worse.
I think I would go with the Knicks here.
Yeah.
They have more current capital. Like RJ Barrett, like that is legitimately encouraging what's happening, right? Like you're starting to look at, okay, here's a young wing who could be in an all-star game at some point, the way this is going. So I think there's reason to get excited about that. They've kept their books relatively clean. They have some at least halfway decent young players who could be pieces in trades, and if nothing else, more desirable market for free agency, you would think. And this group
has drafted relatively well.
They've drafted well.
Leon Rose's former client.
And they've built up draft capital too, which I think is significant. So at the margins, you like them better. The Randall extension is looking maybe not so great now.
Oh, that's correct.
And the Fournier deal was probably not great. But they haven't, for a Knicks, you know, Dolan era Knicks team, like it's been a while since they did something destructively bad where the moment it happened, you were just like laughing at them and pointing, right? They're like, we haven't had that for basically the entire Rose administration.
Yeah. And they are still New York. They are going to be willing to spend when it makes sense to do so. And Barrett, I'm a little lower on Barrett than you. I've always been, I think there's a very possible tendency to overrate him given, you know, Duke and New York and number three pick and stuff. He has taken some encouraging strides forward. That's definitely the case. And they're definitely so, and they've been competently managed. Like I actually liked their offseason okay, other than maybe going 1 year too many on Fournier. So they can get back to being 500 these next couple of years. The reason they're so low is just there's no clear path forward beyond that, really. And Julius Randle maybe can play a little bit better next year. Yeah, they could possibly be a 45 win team at some point, which I don't think you can say for San Antonio or Washington or Sacramento in this 27 to 30 group that I have. And that leaves us with number 30.
So here's the thing. The bar is so low for this team that for those fans of that team, if this team were to say, make the play-in once and make the eighth seed once in the next 5 year span, that would be construed as a, right? As like a team of the century for that city, right?
Oh man.
Not team of the century. Okay. They were 2004. That was the last time they were really awesome. But it's been, is it 14 or 15 now? I lost track.
2006. Is the last year they made the play.
Why the hell are they still trying to win games, by the way?
What do you mean? They shut down Sabonis and Fox at this point, right?
Did they shut them down?
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
The last time I was watching them, those guys were playing. Okay.
Yeah, no, Sabonis got a knee thing. There's some hand issue with Fox. So I think they've accepted it at this point.
And you know, this is another team that's plagued by just, can we please just get the eighth seed and that's our only aspiration in the world. Also, obviously the worst managed, I would say, and I say that mainly like ownership and the different chefs in the kitchen or whatnot. I think the
Sabonis trade is just a perfect encapsulation of the Vivek idiocy that has plagued this team since he took over in 2020.
Yes, and he will raise their short-term floor, but
they didn't even raise the short-term floor. I don't even know if Sabonis is better than Halliburton right now.
Wow. They're
5-10.
Wow.
They're 5-10 with Sabonis in the lineup.
Okay.
They traded for him and if anything got worse and like they also moved on from Buddy Hield. So they have no shooting now and they have no shooting and they have no defense because Sabonis is their center now.
You left out no wings.
Right. Yeah. They had no wings and no shoot. I mean, I guess Barnes is more of a
Barnes.
Four.
Yeah. Justin Holiday, who's in he's really runs hot and cold and they have him as a starter.
So
as long as you have six centers though, and you have Trey Lyles, who you can play as a seventh one. I mean, I think that positions you in the modern NBA for success.
Yeah, and then throw in that they're either going to have to give Sabonis a big extension, which he'll be eligible for after this year, or lose him. And, it, like, I mean, there's, with him at center and no good defensive players on the roster, like, if you look at what the upside of this team could be, there's no, unless they get just some unbelievable defensive coach in there, there's no way they're going to be a top 20 defense over the next, I mean, as long as Sabonis is there, probably. I mean, Fox is terrible. You know, it's basically Davion Mitchell and a bunch of guys who are either, you know, okay at best on,
either,
on
defense. Yeah, guys who are either okay or are not okay, right? But not plus defenders. So they got some work to do this offseason. Their cap is just okay going forward, but it's okay. I mean, Barnes is entering the last season of his deal, so we'll see what they do there.
Are they going to not trade him next year too? As they fight again for the 10th seed, and then he just finally walks in free agency. Or no, then maybe they just give him a new contract. Maybe they'll extend him this offseason. Who knows?
Give him the bag. Yeah.
Yeah. We got to do pod at some point. The extension, possible extensions. That was a good one from last year.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
There's a lot out there.
So I just, they can never get better defensively, I would say, as long as Sabonis is there. And I don't see the...
And you know what's the worst part?
Top 10 offense.
Because they keep chasing that carrot in front of them that they can never reach, they're going to go exactly 31-51 for each of the next 5 years and never get that high lottery pick they need that could actually give them a chance to propel forward.
Yeah, that's the other thing, right? It's same reason as the mentality. And, you know, I would love to be able to put Sacramento in the category of, like, young and rebuilding teams. Like, the reason that I have Washington and Sacramento the lowest is it's like they're at the middle of the downslope, but they're never going to allow themselves to get to the trough so that they can begin cresting the next hill. They're going to just keep walking laterally sideways along the downslope for eternity.
Exactly. You see, so I can relate to this because that's the exact thing we fought in Memphis my last 2 years there, where it was like it was over, but we were still clinging to it. And we lucked out that Mark and Mike retained their trade value for those 2 years. So it was like, as long as you have those players, there's still the possibility of turning that into something. But the players have to retain their value. So you worry, like, if Lillard gets the big extension, if Beal gets the big deal, then what happens to their trade value at that point, which for the last 2 years has been really, really high?
All right. Well, I think we're pretty firmly in agreement on Sacramento being last. Who is the hardest to rank for you?
The Lakers.
Yeah, just because it's LA and they can pull
the possibility, the possibilities for them. There's just always high-end possibilities that you can imagine out there because their cap is clean. And they're the Lakers. So that was hard because you kind of have to use your imagination about what might happen. Although I think the way the league is trending, there are fewer players hitting unrestricted free agency, which may make it harder for them to do the types of things that they've done in the past.
I would say that the young and rebuilding teams are hard to rank just because we don't know what's going to happen in the lottery this year.
Yeah.
I would say that Toronto was pretty difficult for me as well. So these teams that are just, they always seem to figure it out because they have good management, but maybe they don't have the clearest path to really getting into contention. I thought that was difficult. OKC is hard just because they have all these assets, but just how long is it going to be before they actually start turning them into production? Like, I have faith that it will happen at some point, but just when in this five-year time horizon that we're talking about, will that begin to occur? But also just being if the ranking is, if we're not just doing who wins the most, it's who you would want to be a fan of. And I think OKC, nice organization, a team that is going to have a lot of interesting young guys that you're going to want to just find out about as a fan. So that's why I had them at 13. I thought that seemed a good splitting the difference of their assets and how pathetic they are right now. So here, I did re-listen to our podcast from last year on this, and there are a few interesting nuggets I wanted to point out, mostly at my own expense, sadly.
Okay.
I asked you last year, Atlanta Hawks over under 0.5 conference finals in the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the under, and that obviously was incorrect because they made it last
year. Wow. Yeah.
But the hilarity is, I actually feel worse about them now than I felt about them this time last year.
Right.
Despite the fact they made the conference finals last year. How crazy is that? This one was actually, I can pat myself on the back for this.
Okay.
We did this right after Brooklyn had traded for James Harden. And I said, well, if it doesn't work out, Brooklyn could always trade one of those big three if they needed to. And I predicted it was kind of an unstable situation. And that was right. That turned out to be correct. I also had Philly lower than I think some people did because I didn't believe in them as a playoff team last year. That turned out to be right.
Wow. Okay.
I had the LA Lakers number one last year when they were, I think, 21-6 at the time that we did the podcast.
Yeah.
And had just won the NBA championship and they had LeBron and AD and everyone was looking great. And then AD went down and it's gone off the rails a little bit since then. And I also said, the Lakers management seems to be semi-competent now that Magic is gone.
They found a different kind of magic.
I should have known with the Schroeder trade, which I was not in favor of, that they just didn't.
That was the tell, right?
Yeah, that was the canary in the coal mine. This was a great one. I said that I liked what I'd seen from Nate Bjorkgren so far.
Oof.
Hey, that was at the time when like Malcolm Brogdon was like, oh yeah, it's so good to have this coach there. He like set up some DHO play for Sabonis to win a game early and like everyone was singing his praises. And that didn't last too long. And one thing that we were both right on is we said that it was totally wide open over the next couple of years in a way that it hadn't been. And I think that's borne out.
Has absolutely played out. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't come back and be like, oh, yeah, it was obvious in the end. Like the Lakers didn't or Clippers didn't just like steam to the championship last year and, you know, just blow through and win every series in five. And I was like, oh, yeah, we should have known it was going to be these guys the whole time. Like, no, there was not an obvious one. And I feel the same way this year. Honestly, despite what Phoenix has done in the regular season. Ready to rule a team out of the playoffs? Or two teams out of the playoffs? We're going to finish up here.
Rule two teams out of the playoffs.
Oh, man, you teased this.
I did.
Going forward.
Let me start with the low-hanging fruit.
Okay.
LA Lakers, goodbye.
And are you saying that because you believe they will not even make the play-in at this point?
I think they are drawing less than 50% to make the play-in. And then even if they make the play-in, for them to win two in a row on the road, or on the road-ish, I guess, at Clippers might be the second one. But I just don't
Paul
see
George.
It.
Paul George coming back was actually
that's
really
a game changer.
A lot.
Yeah. The Paul George coming back may be the only thing that spares us total embarrassment for ruling out New Orleans so early.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, well, New Orleans was still never even going to get to be the eighth seed, but yeah, let's see here. Yeah, and the Clippers will be the eighth seed. New Orleans, 79% chance being nine. And then Lakers still given a 25% chance of the 10th seed. But also, LeBron's going to try to come back on Friday. They're going to lose to Utah tonight. AD's going to try to come back on Friday. Like, those guys aren't going to be 100%. I don't see how they're going to be 100% a week from now when they have to win two road games. Oh, gosh. Yeah, so that would give me... Yeah, I mean, I we've already ruled out New Orleans anyway. Yeah, there's no one else to rule out. It's got to be the Lakers.
Unless you're going to rule out the Clippers. Unless you're going to say the Lakers are going to beat the Clippers in that final play-in.
You can't. Yeah. That would be... All right, so this is 3:30 LA Lakers. Yeah, I mean, that's much easier than in the East, I think. So you and I have both already ruled out the Charlotte Hornets, John, and they are actually on a tear at the moment.
Yes.
They have some chance of being the eighth seed, which could start to make things interesting.
Yeah, if they finished ahead of Brooklyn, I guess. It would make things interesting because it would make what I'm about to say impossible. So we hinted at this early in the show, but the team I'm going to eliminate from the playoffs, I'm going to go out slightly on a limb here and eliminate Cleveland.
Ooh, that is risky because Cleveland, number one, they could just be in the top six, right?
Like that seems pretty unlikely at this point. So
them being the top six. So
yeah.
I mean, Mobley is out at least three more games. Garland is really out of gas. Allen, who knows? I mean, they're talking about him trying to come back, but I don't know how effective he can be with a broken hand or broken finger.
And the depth just isn't there for them. So I think it's pretty likely they end up seven. It's possible they could even end up eight, but then the one where I'm maybe reaching a little
here's a little monkey wrench for you though, John.
Okay.
They play both Philadelphia and Milwaukee. I think those teams might be pretty interested in, well, I guess it'll depend. We'll see where those teams are going to end up. Milwaukee doesn't fuck around in the same way with the matchups. We saw that last year, but Philly, they might be very interested in just punting punting a game and letting Cleveland win, because they might also want to stay away from Brooklyn by losing and also force Brooklyn down into the opposite bracket by letting Cleveland win. And maybe Milwaukee.
I don't understand. There's a 7-8 game no matter what. Brooklyn can't get up to six. They're four back with six games left.
I mean, it could happen. Like Cleveland could go 1-5 the rest of the way, and Brooklyn has a very easy
schedule. Cleveland's 7 right now, though.
Oh.
You're just flipping the home road for a Cleveland-Brooklyn game.
I fucked that up. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, you're right. You actually want Cleveland to have home court in the 7th then. Yeah. Okay, so never mind. That's not going to happen in that case.
So where I'm slightly out on a limb,
maybe they would want Cleveland to be 6 and Chicago to be 7. That would be the only other aspect to that, potentially. But all right, so you're ruling out Cleveland. I mean, I think I agree with you on this, that Cleveland will be most likely to be the worst of those teams in the play-in, just in terms of like on a neutral floor playing a game.
Yeah.
Between Atlanta, and they don't have anyone as good as Trae Young. If they were totally healthy, then maybe I'd feel differently, but I just don't. Mobley, like him.
Yeah,
him
being that's back the thing. Time, the health, I'm not sure. The health picture with them has changed so much. Yeah. So where it becomes a little bit of a reach for me is I'm now saying that Atlanta, who's in 10th place right now, is going to win 2 play-in games to take their spot.
Or Charlotte, right?
Well, I already eliminated Charlotte, though.
Oh, yeah. I guess
so. I'm
that's
stuck
true.
With Atlanta.
But you could at least be, even if you have already eliminated Charlotte, eliminating Cleveland rather than Atlanta is still better. You're still giving yourself a better chance if you think either Charlotte or Atlanta will win.
Yeah.
Because that way, at least you're only missing on one team rather than two.
I mean, we agree. They're going to get smoked by Brooklyn, right?
Cleveland?
Yeah.
One game is one game, but and the Nets are inconsistent. But all that said, yes. Yes, I fear so. I think that would appear to be the consensus.
Yeah.
I mean, smoked. I would give the Cavs a 30% chance of win, probably.
Yeah. All right.
So that's not an insanely low broil. They are still at home. Whew. Yeah. Atlanta though, there's no way they get to be in the top 8, and then they could easily just lose to the Hornets also, and not even be.
Yeah.
No. It'll make it interesting too. I'm gonna rule out Atlanta, and this will just make it interesting. One of us can be right, and one of us can be wrong. So we don't have all the same teams. I think that's right. That's the way this needs to end.
Okay.
So now I can be rooting for Caris LeVert in the play-in might be difficult for me. Why did I just do that to myself? All right. Well, this is fun. You can, of course, catch John and I live on Spotify Green Room at 12 Pacific, 3 Eastern on Wednesdays. Generally, jump in, ask us some questions. And of course, this podcast comes out usually every Wednesday. We may change that up a little bit right before the start of the playoffs in 2 weeks, but we'll be on Wednesday next week. So we'll talk to y'all then.